The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
This week, the Aer Lingus uniform was given an update by fashion designer Louise Kennedy. Originally designed in brown by Sybil Connolly in 1945, it only adopted its signature green colour a few years later. But who came up with the idea of uniforms for workplaces originally? Writer Jessica Traynor has been finding out.
Picture this. You're lying on an operating table, waiting for an operation. The atmosphere is tense. Then suddenly, a guy wearing a Frankie Says Relax t-shirt...
Hey, dude!
...and a woman in a unicorn onesie stroll into the room.
Unicorn! Yay!
They tell you they're your surgical team. You find yourself running for the door.
Get me out of here!
Uniforms are important to us. They can provoke lots of reactions from respect to contempt, even sympathy. Designed to differentiate certain members of society from others, there's a paradox at the core. Uniforms can make you look the same, and they can make you look different.
Dealing with a different animal here, boys.
Think of the Jets and the Sharks staging their epic cross-city dance-off in West Side Story.
When you're a Jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day.
Their tribes proclaimed by their different gang colours. Or a Marvel hero donning their suit for the first time, the brightly coloured spandex that makes them part of the superhero tribe.
Truth is, I am Iron Man.
Or of any two sports teams, indistinguishable from each other except for the colour of their jerseys.
At Tipperary, and incredibly, the All-Ireland champions of 2010, they beat the greatest team of all time, Kilkenny, champions of 2009.
Maybe even one of the most ubiquitous uniforms, so prevalent we hardly see it, the business suit. So where did it all begin? With liveries, in fact. Noble houses in the Middle Ages used colourful liveries and banners to mark out their staff. If you were part of the nobility, you didn't want just anyone dressing better than you. No one could, in fact, because right up until the 17th century, sumptuary laws in Europe prevented the bourgeoisie from embarrassing the nobility by upstaging their outfits. The earliest school uniforms came from charitable schools like Christ's Hospital in Sussex. As early as 1552, a uniform of a long blue coat was provided to the orphan students. It certainly marked out their status. My school uniform had its own peculiar kind of power, immediately barring us from any of the local newsagents. Postmen too got the royal treatment in 18th century Britain. The mail coach guards were assigned scarlet coats with blue lapels. They hoped would-be robbers, a real problem at the time, would think the military were on board. As monarchies gave way to modern nation-states, the tradition of the uniform to denote power and authority evolved. Forces such as the police and the military were given standardised uniforms. The point of this was to create recognition of the organisation and to flatten out the social differences between its members. This could be useful when you wanted to control an unruly public and to limit social mobility. In extremes, uniform has been used as a tool of oppression. We can see plenty of examples of this in the 20th century, from the Mao suit of the People's Republic of China.
To assist Comrade Osborne in his dealings with his newfound comrades, I brought him along Mao's little red book.
To the fascists' elaborate military uniform in the Second World War, black shirts, blue shirts, even silver shirts. And in the case of prisoners in concentration camps, and prisoners all over the world today, uniform has been used as a means to take power away.
In Auschwitz, you could smell the fear. You really could smell it.
But uniforms aren't only markers of state power. They can be used by organisations working against the state to make a statement of togetherness while in disguise. Look at the recent Hong Kong protests, where the ubiquitous face mask and umbrella uniforms sharply differentiated the rioters from the black-clad riot squads. The history of the uniform is also a history of rebellion.
We don't need no education.
People don't take well to being made part of tribes against their will. In my teenage years, some purple hair dye and a pair of Doc Martens paired with my school uniform proclaimed my tribe, the accessory equivalent of a moody teenager rolling their eyes in the family photo.
Could you smile there, love?
In communist regimes, attempts to create state uniforms failed as individuals ripped and re-sewed their state-given clothes into subtly different designs. So the history of uniforms is a history of ideas. Of society's ideas of how we should live, of how we represent our tribe to the world. They're a fascinating archive of our lives.
Look at this one. Isn't this pretty?
Yeah.
It's really pretty and sweet and, you know, we don't want to upstage Lillian with a big fancy dress. Maybe we should just get something kind of simple.
As Aer Lingus launches its new set of uniforms, which include, shock, horror, the option of trousers for women. It's intriguing to look back at their khaki 1945 uniform with its militaristic overtones sported by citizens of a neutral country and ask, who did we think we were then?
It features a collarless V-necked jacket and a houndstooth check of navy and green.
And who do we think we are now? In a world that seems to be reverting to comforting but dangerous myths of tribal origin, to the exclusion of many kinds of difference, it's heartening to see the uniform, that old monolithic symbol, is also open to evolution. And I'm happy with that. As long as the surgical team are wearing their scrubs.
Jessica Traynor there.